Okay, so I think what we're going to do now is go to the 1 minute poster talks. So I'm going to find the other mic. So if you can just be prepared to come up, I'm going to go through the list more or less in the order that it's in the green thing. So Charlotte Christensen, if you'd like to, if you are here. She's not here. All right, that's Gerhard Hensler. I'm afraid I don't know everyone, so I don't know. Okay. Two posters, 2 minutes? Yeah. Okay.
I collected them, and one poster is included in the other poster. We've tried, for instance, several modelization of galaxy evolution, understanding the recipes, for instance, for numerical studies, for numerical simulations, and also the feedback issues, and that is all collected in the, on the one poster of several papers or so, which we have published recently.
So the next is David Williamson. Alex got to give a short talk, so that's why he's not giving a talk now, and neither will Jason Glenn, because he also gave a short talk.
Okay, so I'm doing galaxy SPH simulations with boring old-fashioned feedback. And without boring old-fashioned feedback, just to see what the difference is. In particular, I'm looking at molecular clouds, their evolution and formation. And in the poster I've got out there, I'm talking about the spin of molecular clouds and where do retrograde spinning molecular clouds come from, because from the observations, about 40 to 60% of molecular clouds are rotating retrograde. And I guess if you want to find out the answer, you can look at the poster.
Thanks. So next up is Pedro Barral.
My poster is about mid-infrared mapping of the outflows in MBT2 with Spitzer spectrograph. So we use Spitzer to observe the northern southern outflow in the map. It's the whole outflow of MET2. And we use the maps to extract the spectral feature maps of molecular hydrogen, especially if we focus on the molecular hydrogen lines and pH features. And we use them to diagnose the excitation of the molecular warm molecular gas in the mid-infrared. So it's about a couple of hundred kelvins in the outflows of MT2. So what the origins of the warm molecular gas can be several UV shocks, we conclude that far out of 5 kiloparsecs, the warm molecular gas is definitely excited by shocks, and also we model it and derive the shock velocities and kinetic energy. So just check out my poster.
Okay, thanks. So next is Christoph Federoth. Okay, one slide.
I don't know. Does that work or not? Good. Hi, so I'm Christoph Federoth from Monash University, and I'm basically interested in how stars form, and sure enough, they do form in Carina, for example, which we have seen before. So there are all these large-scale feedback processes that we are interested in, but I want to point out that there are also small-scale feedback processes, like in this region. So there's, for example, a jet forming from a protostar, and it injects a lot of mass and momentum. So, and as this is a general theme of the conference, small scales may affect large scales. It might be interesting to study what the effect of these outflows is. And so what we have done is implemented a subgrid model for launching jets. So you have to resolve the disk, the protostellar disk, and the jet launching process to actually get jets. And if you want to include the effects of jets in a large star cluster formation simulation, you just have to have a subgrid model for that, because you can never resolve it for each and every star. So you need a good subgrid model. So we have a low resolution and a high resolution run without the model, and one low resolution calculation with the subgrid model, and you basically see that you can recover with the subgrid model the effect that you would only get if you had very high resolution. And putting that into a star cluster simulation, almost done. So this is one without outflows from the stars, and this is one with.
And
so you basically see that you get these outflows, and the main point is, really that outflow feedback reduces the star mass by a factor of 3. So it has an important effect on the IMF. Thank you.
Okay. Next is Ju Hun Yun.
Hi, I'm Ju, postdoc here working with Krista. So her former postdoc, Elena Haney, published a beautiful paper which extends the mass metallicity relation down to 10 to the 8 solar mass at redshift 0.6 or 0.7. But the data, the metallicity measurement is still have large uncertainty to constrain any feedback models. So we are now running near infrared CAT like spectroscopy to have better constraint in metallicity calibration and dust reddening correction and star formation rate estimation. So my poster is for better, for more precise measurement in for low precise measurement of metallicity for low mass galaxies. So my poster is in the in front of the middle door. So please come and see.
Okay, Coral Wheeler.
Hi, I'm Coral. I'm a graduate student at UC Irvine working with James Bullock. And my project is investigating the inefficiency of dwarf satellite quenching. We were inspired by a 2012 paper from Marla Gia where she showed that below about 10 to the 9 solar masses, dwarf galaxies are not quenched in the field. But what we also noticed that even close to a larger neighbor, dwarf galaxies are only quenched about 25-30% of the time. So we compared the data that Marla used from Sloan to the Millennium 2 simulation and investigated a series of simple one-parameter quenching models to try to figure out what's affecting the quenching, what's causing the quenching, why is it so inefficient. We looked at host mass, infall time, the amount of satellite mass loss, and just to let you know, one of our main results, if it's infall time, for satellites of lower than about 10 to the 9, it takes over 9.5 gig years to quench these things. So come check out my poster. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Åke Nordlund? You here? I'm going to assume not. Okay. Sasha Muratov.
Hi, I'm Sasha Muratov. I work with Dushan and Phil and Claude Andre on the FIRE project, and I'm the one that's been charged to try to understand the properties of the galactic wind generated in FIRE simulations. And so far, I mean, I think Dushan showed a lot of my results, but I've been looking at the way that star formation, inflow, and outflow rates all kind of line up with regard to the timing of galaxy evolution. And we've gone as far as to measure mass loading factors for lots of different galaxies and lots of different scenarios. But as I'm doing this, I'm realizing that there's lots of different places to measure the mass loading factor, lots of different times, lots of different ways. So all of them give you different results, and we're trying to explore that. So if you want to see what I've been doing so far or have any other suggestions for other things you might try or what you might want to look for in terms of characterizing the galactic winds, feel free to talk to me.
Okay, is there anyone else who, like Sasha, had a poster? Yes, okay. A few people not on the list.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dong Zhang. I'm from Ohio State University. I'm working with Todd Thompson and Maury, Noel Maury, and Elliot Quarter. So in my poster, I'm showing the constraint of hot galactic wind by X-ray luminosity of their host galaxies. We know that a spherical galactic wind can be described by Shibuya and Clegg's model. They have two control in parameters, the energy input from supernova explosion to ISM and the mass loading rate, which is a ratio between mass loading between hot mass loss rate to total star formation rate. But these two parameters are very difficult to be determined in theory. If we use the X-ray luminosities, we can constrain these two parameters, especially the mass loading rate. We found because the X-ray luminosity of star formation galaxies have a very tight linear correlation with their star forming rate. So if the mass loading rate is too high, the X-ray, the hot galactic wind will produce too much diffuse X-ray and become invalid with the relation between luminosity, X-ray luminosity and the star formation rate. So our basic conclusion is that for a star formation rate with bigger than 10 solar mass per year, the mass loading rate should be less than order of one, order of magnitude of one. And I think it's a very strong constraint regardless of other parameters in the model. I think this conclusion is a little different from other simulation works, which assume the mass loading efficiency is order of magnitude of 10 or something like that. If you're interested in my poster, please talk with me in post session.
Okay, anyone else who's not on the poster list?
So I will be taking the place of Charlotte Christensen in front of her poster tonight, so I thought I would advertise her work, which is very similar to what Sasha was just talking about. So she has, Charlotte has been working with a series of high-resolution simulations between about 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 12 in total halo mass, and she has also been looking at how much gas is ejected from the disk as well as how much actually leaves the Vero radius and the mass loading factors and that sort of thing. So you should come by and actually compare the, you know, the two different results between simulations and see what they look like. But in addition, Charlotte has also looked at the recycling times and how much of the gas actually comes back into the halo and into the disk. So if you're interested in that, please stop by.
Okay, thanks. Are there any announcements? If not, thank you everyone, and please go have a look at the posters.